No, it's like, you know, like when it counts down at the beginning of
I know, movies. But it went 7, 8, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's supposed to go like 10, 9, 8. Yeah.
Mine did it.
I've never seen it. It always goes like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Because I always want to do the Wayne's World thing where they're like.
Yeah, that's weird. Are you sure?
I guess I just made the whole thing up.
Do you have your contacts in?
I don't wear them usually. I just wear these, but not when I'm close to my
computer. Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought you were blind without them.
Oh, well, I had LASIK in the early 2000s.
I think I did know that now that you mention it. Yeah. That's cool. I got LASIK for what?
We haven't started the show yet.
This is quality. I got LASIK for Dingle Mommy like early in our marriage, and then we declared bankruptcy, so we didn't even have to pay for it.
I remember that. That's awesome.
So, you know, free LASIK.
You should have like bought a bunch of cars and stuff. I guess they take them back. They can't take your eyeballs back.
Well, that was part of the problem is that we leased a car that was way out of our price range, and that was the catalyst for our bankruptcy. All right. So I guess, now we'll start. How about that?
Okay.
Sounds like F. Murray Abraham is having a good time.
Yes. He's playing with his car that he likes so much. He started taking it to bed with him. Like usually he has a lovey, but now we're like, here, let me trade the bunny for the car. But he just like holds onto the car with like death grip. So we're like, okay, hang on to the car.
Have you been watching Teton with him again?
I have no idea what
that I know
is.
That's another joke. Like I made that Kimmy joke yesterday. I know it would go over your head, but it's a French film that won the Palme d'Or at Cannes last year about a woman who has sex with a car.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So, you know, it's pretty hot.
How does that – I guess I'll have to watch it.
Mostly it just – she straps herself into the back seat and it just bounces up and down. And then she gets pregnant with a car baby.
Huh. Okay. No judgment.
Anyway. Anyway, hello. Welcome to Adventures in Gabysitting. Chronicling the highs and lows of coming out of the closet and having a baby having your first baby at the age of 40. My name is Documenta Barbarism, the worst person in the world.
My name is Shannon Corder, and I am a member of the Gazpacho Police.
What's that from?
It's a thing that Marjorie Taylor Greene said this week about some Democrat. Yes, she meant to gazpacho. Say Gestapo. Mm-hmm.
She does that shit on purpose, right?
I don't know. I really don't know because she really does seem – I don't know why you'd want to pretend to be that stupid.
Because it makes her richer and richer and more powerful every time someone speaks her name.
I guess so. Yeah, she gains power when we say her name. I'm sure like it was. Bloody I'm Mary. Sure she was talking about either. Yeah, it was either AOC or MGD, Miller Genuine Draft.
If you say her name three times in a mirror, she appears with a jar of gazpacho, a pitcher.
Yes.
Which what I guess is actually like I mean, a Bloody Mary anyway, right?
It's
like
it kind of is.
Without the alcohol.
It's a cold soup, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like vichyssoise. Which I've only ever heard about in Batman.
Classy. Yeah, I get all my info from the movies too, so I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
So I Dingle Mary.
So what is the worst person in the world? Sorry, what's that from?
Oh, that's actually the title. It's a movie title.
Oh, okay.
It just came out and it was a big hit at New York Film Festival, and I think it got a couple Oscar nominations as well, actually.
Oh.
It's a Norwegian romantic. I haven't seen it. It seems pretty divisive. I don't know.
Have you seen Power of the Dog?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I watched that. Did you?
I haven't seen it, but Jason saw it and he liked it a lot.
Yeah.
And then I feel like I don't need to see it because, I mean, he had mixed feelings, but he says it's really done well and will probably win everything. And he told me like the whole plot. Cause I was like, I probably am not going to watch it. I haven't even finished Shang-Chi.
Yeah. So, and it's not,
I don't know if I have time for a
normies love it.
Oh, is it the new Green Book?
No, not really. Just because, but I mean, the whole, you know, the whole point is, and you know, this, if you don't know yet, I'm sure, I mean, I'm sure he told you, but listeners, if you don't know, like the whole point is he's closeted, you know, and so he, that's part of why he acts out. And it's not that really that insightful unless you have never like known a gay person or been around a gay person before.
Okay.
So, and that's not really, and it seems to be, people seem to really be, and I mean, where it got me is just in the way that it does, that it reveals the twist, and then, like, it really ends well. I think that's so, you know, that's the hardest thing to do, and also the most important. It really ends strongly. But once you've processed the twist, you're just like, oh, yeah, okay, cool.
I need to see it, but the thing that I thought sounded interesting is to have a gay character that's like not really redeemable, or that is just a total asshole. And it isn't like, oh, now you found friends, now you're nice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like he just stays an asshole. He can tell when he's laughing. Maybe I should see it. It just, I'm not really in the mood these days to watch like stuff that's a fucking downer.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Cody, hold on, I'm going to move my chair up. I'm too fat for my chair. And Cody Smith McPhee plays a good demon twink, you know, like it's not, and it's beautiful, of course, like everything Jane Campion makes, but.
Demon twink, wow. Can we rename our podcast Demon Twink?
No, that was a whole thing. There was a Britney Spears river cruise around Manhattan last year. And that was, someone filmed some twink dancing alone or something and called them Demon Twink. So it became a whole
thing.
Oh, meme.
My God. That's funny.
Yeah. No one who knew who he was. So thank you for reorganizing or for meeting earlier with me today. That sounded very formal. Thanks for changing the recording time.
Mary. Technically, we're 2 days late. So thank you.
That's true. Right, who knows? I can't even remember the last time we recorded when we were supposed to.
Yeah.
Actually, I think last time we may have, but it was...
I think so.
It felt strange because we hadn't anyway. Dingle Mary, as I told you, was at the mall with friends. He was supposed to... Mm-hmm. They were all going to be coming over today for... They want to start like a monthly movie night type thing.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, but then my mom developed COVID symptoms again. She took a test and she's probably, and the test was negative. Like I doubt she would have it again so soon after she had just gotten over it. But to be on the safe side, the friends didn't come over. So they all decided to meet at the mall instead.
Well, that just goes to show that I have no idea how any of this works whatsoever. Because I thought, I mean, unless it was a different strain, I didn't think you could get it again so quickly.
Yeah, I don't know about quickly, but there, I'm trying to remember who it was. I can't remember. I think it was some relative of someone is anti-vax and has had COVID 4 times.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So I don't know. So we're just being on the safe side. It's probably not. Yeah. She already feels better. She just woke up and it really had sort of hit her like a truck. So to be on the safe side, they didn't come over, but. Dingle Mary was really bummed because he was looking forward to showing them Heathers and Clueless. Those were the movies he had picked for today.
Sweet, sweet.
Because awesome. apparently he says, fuck me gently with a chainsaw all the time around them.
I've never seen Heathers.
Oh, it's so good. Oh my God. Christian Slater. Whew.
I did have a thing for him back in the day. I'll probably watch it now and be like, oh God, he looks like he's 12.
No, not really, because he was like Ben Platt and Dear Evan Hansen. He already looked 30 even when
yeah, I should watch that. I know that's in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, I think you'd love it.
But please send your love. No, please send my love to your mother.
I will.
Do your parents know that you and I are doing this podcast together?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or do you
But I don't. Ask I didn't tell them. Yeah, sometimes. I think they find out information like that secondhand because we don't really talk about anything.
Like from Dingle Mary or?
No, I think from my sisters, if anything.
Probably. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad that she's doing better.
Yeah, I think she'll be fine. But this, it's Dingleberry is really, he's just, I can't remember last time we talked if we, did I tell you he was applying for a job and all that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
So did I tell you he got the job?
Yes. Well, that's, you didn't tell me he was applying, but you did tell me that he got it.
Oh, right. So it's like all these things are happening so quickly. He got his first job. He started working. It seems like it's going to be a great fit. And so and he has his own debit card now. And he was at the mall. This is the first time he's at the mall with money in his pocket and a debit card. So he, you know, I've been really nervous to see. I mean, I've been nervous all week. I was a fucking mess on Monday when he started working. Just because, like, I mean, not for any, you know, just not for any real reason. Just I was like, what if a customer is mean to my baby?
Oh,
you know, bullshit like that.
Yeah,
but I'm very proud of him because he's at the mall and he's texted me a couple of times. He's like, I really want this shirt. And then he said apparently there was a skirt he wanted to get to. I don't know, at like Forever 21 or something. But he thought about it. You know, he texted me. He's like, I don't think I will. I just can't justify it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's already displaying, you know, better financial acumen than I or his mother ever have a day in our lives.
And me too. I try to have rules. I'm an adult, so I can instantly buy things on Amazon, or if I wanted to go to the mall, I could go to the mall and then like come back the next day. It's not like I go to the mall once a month when my when my dad gives me a drive. What does that mean?
That's between anyway, you and your therapist.
Yes. And my car. So I have the luxury of being like, okay, I'm gonna, if I'm still thinking about it tomorrow, I'll come back and get it or something, you know? Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, if I'm going to be at the mall for several hours, I guess I could do that. So.
Yeah, that's what I told him. I told him to, like, if you want something, to move on to other shops and stuff. And then if he still wants it later, you know, then maybe think about, or check first if it's available online. That's what the one way I sort of talk myself out of purchases often when I'm in person. Yeah, look it up. And if it's online, I'm just like, I can get it later.
Yeah, that's smart.
Is Dr. Ian Malcolm good with money, or are you both? Is it a?
Yeah, we're both bad with money in different ways.
Yeah, so was I in Jingle Mommy.
I think we both assumed the other one was the one that would be good with money. And then, like, it took us a couple years to be like, oh, they're just as bad with money as I am.
Yeah, that's how we ended up with a lease for a brand new Nissan Maxima when we had no money.
Mm-hmm.
And why we had to declare bankruptcy.
If you live in the greater New York area or have a good microphone and would like to share your story on Closet Practice, anonymously or not, message me on Twitter at DocumentaB, on Instagram at DocumentaBarbarism, online at DocumentaBarbarism.com, or by email to buttstuff@DocumentaBarbarism.com, with only one A in barbarism. That's DocumentaBarbarism. In the meantime, be sure to subscribe to House of Barbarism on your pod thingy of choice so you don't miss a single episode of Adventures in Gaby Sitting and Closet Practice every Monday, and Documenta and Son every Thursday.
So let's talk about you.
Yeah, well, it's pretty straightforward. I had a miscarriage, and I had not yet really told anybody except for a few people, including you, that I was pregnant. And I'm not sure how much I've talked about this on the pod, but our first two pregnancies, because this has happened before. F. Murray Abraham is the product of IVF. So we were not actively trying to get pregnant, but I hadn't after we had F. Murray, I decided to not go on birth control because I figured, whatever, I'm buying like a lottery ticket once a month, you know, once every 28 days. And we do have, when we did IVF, we got three good embryos. So one of them is F. Murray Abraham. One of them is one of them is a baby that we had that I was pregnant with before, and that was my first miscarriage, and it was so hard because we didn't know yet if we would be able to have kids, and we were so invested in that pregnancy, so incredibly invested. And the thing is, you have a decision when you do IVF, you can have the embryos tested genetically, so you can find out both the gender and if there's, or I guess I should say sex, because you don't know the gender until they're like, you know, 10 or whatever. Or maybe before then, I don't know. But
or after, really.
They don't come back and say, like, your kid's going to have a butch haircut. They just say, like, you know, penis, vagina, whatever. And I guess technically there's four embryos, because we have one that is an XXY. And I can't remember what the name of it is, but it's some sort of syndrome where it would be a male, but they may not be able to have kids later, and they would have testosterone issues. So if we wanted to, we could use the fourth embryo, but we would have to go through genetic counseling to find out.
Oh, wow.
So
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't have a nickname for that one. The other, the boy embryos we called Steve and Bucky, or Captain America and Bucky. So F. Murray Abraham is Captain America, and that's because he's frozen. And then Bucky is his friend, the Winter Soldier, who is also frozen. And we didn't really have a nickname for the first one. We decided to do the girl baby first. And also, I should mention, these three embryos, this is after five attempted IVF retrieval cycles. So there was one that didn't go because we just didn't have enough eggs. I don't know why I'm saying we, because Dr. Ian Malcolm did not have eggs. So there was one cycle that we just had to cancel, but we did four cycles, and we basically got, I think we got two good embryos after all the genetic testing and stuff after each one. And there was one where we just got zero. We got two, one and one, and then zero. And that was so hard. And the hardest part about, I mean, there's so many hard things about IVF, but one of the hardest parts is there's so much waiting and finding out. You're doing all the drugs and stuff, and they're not fun drugs. And they're telling you, like, okay, it looks like you have this many eggs. It looks like you have this many eggs. And then you wait to find out if you have enough to do a retrieval. And there was a couple times where my doctor was like, well, we can try. I can't promise anything. So it was very hard. So that was all leading up to our first pregnancy. And so there was just so much emotion put into that. And that was very difficult. And I'll talk about that a little bit more, but that's just to lead up to this last pregnancy just spontaneously happened. And like, we weren't like, I literally can tell, I can tell you when we had sex, because it was like right after my parents left town, in November. I don't know. I guess we're
that's
just
weird. That usually doesn't make me randy.
I don't know. We were just in a mood. And the thing is, it was like, I try to track my cycle and stuff, and it was probably, I thought it was too early for that to even work. But it's funny because my cycle started the day before F. Murray Abraham's birthday. So I basically got pregnant like 2 or 3 weeks after he turned one. So it took me a while to figure it out, because I just absolutely thought, I mean, there'd been so many times. So, I mean, we'd been trying since 2017. So there's been so many periods where I am. Whoa. Yeah, I know. Like, and yep. The first time we were like officially trying was, I remember because I told my parents that we were going to start trying at Thanksgiving of 2017 in Leavenworth, Washington. Yeah. So we had quite the journey. So I just was so used to just getting a period and every time being like, oh, God damn it, you know? And so it was like a couple days late and I wasn't paying attention. But then all of a sudden I started to get really super nauseous. And I was like I would take the trash out and I would be like, and then like gag a bunch of times. But it's so funny because it's like in movies when women get pregnant, like the audience is like, duh, you're pregnant, you know, and it takes them forever to be like, oh my God, maybe I'm pregnant. But that was really how it was. Like my iPhone sent me a notification that was like, did you forget to track your period? And then I realized I was like 6 days late. So I was like, oh my God, holy shit. And I hadn't told Dr. Ian Malcolm yet because I didn't want to get him excited. And then I took a test and it was a couple weeks before, I think it was early December. And I remember I went upstairs, he was still in bed and he's like, why are you making that face? And I just handed it to him and he just looked at it and was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And he just kept saying, oh my God, but like in the exact same way over and over. So, it took us a week or so to process because it just seemed so impossible. It just, and my doctor had warned me, you know, she said like, if you don't want to get pregnant right away, you should go on birth control because, you know, the universe has a sense of humor or God has a sense of humor. She said it, you know, different ways, different times. And when I went in to see her for my first prenatal, I was like, yeah, we're just really surprised. And she was like, well, I'm not. So anyway, here's what we test, you know, like she's just like super passe about it. So the thing is, like when we are in advanced age as far as pregnancy, once you're 35 and you get pregnant, it's called a geriatric pregnancy, which is such a wonderful term.
Yeah.
Anyway, the thing is, we had made it almost out of the first trimester. I think the first trimester is technically 14 weeks. And the others, I think, are 12 weeks. But I went in for an appointment. And it should have been about 12 and a half weeks. And so the first time that I found out, it was because they couldn't find a heartbeat. And so when I had F. Murray Abraham, there was a time they try to find the heartbeat first with like just a sound thing that they just do as an external like ultrasound. And sometimes when it's that early, it's hard to find it. So I was really stressed out when I was pregnant with F. Murray Abraham, because it took them a while to find it. And then they were like, okay, let's get you in for vaginal ultrasound. So I moved rooms and then they found it right away. So that exact same thing happened again. And I should mention, this is all about a week and a day ago. So it's all pretty fresh. And they couldn't find the heartbeat. And I'd talked to this nurse before and she and I had talked about how I had had a miscarriage and she said she had had two. And so we sort of had that bond. And I was like, she was like, it's okay. It's okay. This happens all the time. Sometimes we can't find it like at 16 weeks. And I was like, I know, it's just bringing up some feelings for me. And she's like, I know. And that's like, I started to cry then. And then they put me in a room and left me there for like 10 minutes. And oh, also because of COVID, I was just there by myself. So it was just me. And then the doctor came in and she was like, okay, yeah, we're just going to look for it with the ultrasound. And she started to do the ultrasound and she was kind of quiet for a while. And I was like, would you let me know as soon as you find the heartbeat? And she was like, yeah, I will. And she was sort of quiet for a while. And then she said, okay, I want to be really clear with you. I can see the baby and I can see the head and I can see the feet or the butt. I don't know. It's a, you know, she was saying she could see both ends. She's like, I cannot see a heartbeat and I'm so sorry. And it's funny because I remember exactly the way the IVF when we were pregnant with our first baby, I was still seeing the IVF doctor cause you go in like every week or so, like every couple of weeks. And then you're up to 10 weeks or so before they hand you off to a regular obstetrician. And I'll always remember, you know, the way that she said it also. She was like, she was like, "You guys, I think I have really bad news for you." And then, you know, I remember she left us alone, and Dr. Ian Malcolm and I just sat in the room and cried. And it really took a while to set in. This time, it just hit me just immediately. And she asked, you know, "Do you want some time to call your partner?" And I remember thinking, "Oh, that's so cool that she says partner." Like, in all of that, I was like, and she's met him, you know, they were all in the room together when F. Murray Abraham was born. But that was her default. I appreciated that, and I somehow had the presence of mind. So then it's funny, because this time I feel like I really was front loaded on the grieving. Sobbing and howl crying, and I'm sure she went out and was like, told everybody and what happened and what any of the nurses I was going to interact with after that and stuff, and I'm sure they could hear me. And so then I called Dr. Ian Malcolm, because I knew I couldn't wait to tell him, because if I didn't send a picture of the ultrasound or something, he would probably worry and wonder what was up. So I thought I would just tell him. And then the doctor came back in, and he got off the phone so that he could have some time to process. And then, so she and I talked about next steps. And that's the thing, is like, you go through this horrible, horrible thing, and then you have to talk about a really yucky, gross part. So you basically have three options. I mean, when people talk about miscarriage, they assume the baby just comes out on its own. It's what we see in movies. You're sitting there at dinner, you're all ha ha ha, you're all happy, and then you go in the bathroom, you're like, "Oh, I'm bleeding. Oh, I'm sure it's nothing," you know. And that's why the first one really took me by surprise, is because I assumed that would happen first. But my body stayed thought that it was pregnant for a lot longer. And,
oh, wow. Interesting.
And that was actually, that was actually one thing that was hopeful the first time that this happened, is that my IVF doctor said, like, "Your body wants to stay pregnant." So it was not, so the genetic testing, I kind of went to that and then skipped over it. The genetic testing means that if you're doing IVF and you do the genetic testing, you have a really, really good chance of everything being okay with the baby. So it was really very bizarre when we had the first miscarriage. And it's frustrating, because I'll tell you later all of the things you should never say to a person if they have a miscarriage. But
Goodness. Did I say some of them?
No, you never did. You never did. Okay. And it's all people trying to be helpful, but a lot of people would say, like, you know, it happens all the time. It happens so much more than you know, and it's for the best and so on. And it's like, okay, yeah. But the thing with this, the first pregnancy, was that it really was not supposed to happen. It was supposed to be okay. Like, we had genetically tested other embryos that were not okay, that we knew would not take or would not grow past a certain number of weeks. So this was really a shock. And to this day, we don't know what happened. But the silver lining was that I would probably be able to get and stay pregnant again, because it didn't seem like it was something with my body, like trying to terminate the pregnancy or something like that. It seemed like it was something with the embryo. So your three choices are wait and let it come out on its own. Take some pills, either orally or vaginally, to simulate a miscarriage, and then it pushes out on its own. Or you do something called a DNC, which I'm not even going to say what it stands for, because it's gross, and it's basically surgical removal. So the first time we did it, I was like, "Well, let's just wait and see what happens." And we waited. God, we went on vacation to Big Bear. We took the saddest vacation world ever. And we stayed in this little it was like Labor Day weekend or something. And we stayed in this little bed and breakfast that was super cute, and where we all, like all of the guests had breakfast together. This is pre-COVID, of course. And there was like these two backpackers from Germany, and I was speaking my horrible German with them. And, you know, basically I could be like, yes, orange juice. It is delicious, you know? And then they taught me how to say half and half in German, which is just halb halb, which is just half half, which I thought was funny. And then all of a sudden we're all waiting for the last two people to come down, and this gigantically pregnant woman comes downstairs.
Oh God.
With her husband. And like, first of all, they were sort of problematic. He used the word retarded really casually in conversation, and then talked about how like Californians are retarded about gun laws or something, and all is bullshit. And so I already didn't like him because he was, you know, retarded. And then, yeah, he was, yeah. And for the record, it's taken me a long time to stop using that word. And I do sometimes still like, I catch myself.
Me too. Oh, absolutely. It was used it so much.
Yeah. And gay. That's so gay. We still say that now. Like, but it's funny because we make up the songs, you know, the Linkimals. They'll be like, how are you today? And so Dr. Ian Malcolm will be like, are you feeling gay? And I'll be like, yeah, I am. I am actually a little gay. And then we laugh. So we've I don't know about you, but I've reclaimed gay as an insult. Like, we like, that's so gay. I know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. All the time. Also, I just want to really quickly interject before I forget that we were never. So, you know, the Doctrine and Covenants, like the Book of Mormon scripture, the Doctrine and Covenants, it's colloquially always referred to as the DNC. That's what everyone calls it. But we were never allowed to say that around my grandma because of the, I don't know if she had had one. Or if she just like thought it was gross or anything, but she refused. We were never allowed to call it DNC in her presence.
Oh my God, I never thought of that. I mean, because I don't think about the Doctrine and Covenants on a daily basis. I did have a dream about it once, but we'll get into that some other time. How interesting. I mean, they must have only been doing the procedure for, God, I don't know. I would say the 80s, the 70s.
It must be something she knew about, but had never gone through.
Yeah,
she hadn't had kids since like the 60s, 50s.
Yeah, I was really blunt when I told my mom what it was, and I feel bad. I was like, yeah, it's like an abortion, but the baby's already dead. And then she goes, oh. And I was like, oh, why like, did I say that? I know. Like, I think I had this sort of like macho thing where I was like, it's okay. I'm tough. I'm, you know, I'm not sad about this, but I forgot that they would be grieving as well.
Sure. No, so that makes sense. But
I feel bad.
You don't need to feel bad. Nothing. I mean, you are hardly at fault for anything you do or say under these circumstances.
Well, I'll just say, I wish I had said it differently.
That's fine.
I could just say it's funny because, when I was getting my bill, which is enormous, and it cost us, and we still don't know, we might still get charged by the surgeon and the anesthesiologist separately, but just to have the procedure, it was my full deductible plus like another $200. So it was like about $1,200. And what's funny is I paid $100 copay for the hospital when I actually gave live birth. So it was like 12 times more expensive to have a miscarriage.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That is
insult fucked. To injury. Part of it is because I changed our health plan because our healthcare is so fucking expensive. We pay over like $1,000 every month. I just
forgot about
it because I know. I should switch to like covered California or something, but it also covers IVF. So when we put in Bucky, you know?
Yeah. But anyway, I think I got you off of, you were still talking about Big Bear, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So we're in Big Bear and we're sitting at the table eating delicious food. I would really love to go back to this bed and breakfast. It was amazing. And they really took good care of us in a time when we were really, really going through some shit. So this pregnant lady comes in and turns out she's in Big Bear so that she can get maternity photos taken. And so the whole time, yeah, By the way, I have amazing maternity photos.
Well, obviously.
So whenever people make fun of them, I'm like, but I show them and they're like, oh, this is amazing. Because I tried to make it look like a tarot card. So cool. I was like the Empress. And it was that was a really cool experience for me, since I finally made it all the way to 9 months pregnant. He came out like 4 days later. I was so fucking pregnant and I did pee so bad the whole time. But anyway, sorry. I have not yet. Wait, maybe I did start taking my Concerta again. I can't even remember. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm all over the place. So we had to sit there through this excruciating breakfast and listen to this woman talk about her pregnancy. Of course, it was a little girl. And I really wanted to be like, I'm pregnant too, but the baby's dead. Like, I just wanted to throw that
so
out.
You so should have.
Oh, God. No, it would have
just ruined, to shut ruined him up. Every.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it would have. This is why I'm a screenwriter, so I can put that kind of thing into a script but not actually do it in real life, because it just never turns out the way that you think it's going to in real life.
True.
But I just was sitting there like, because and like every night I was sleeping with like a bunch of towels because I didn't know when it was going to start, you know. So we were in Big Bear. It was nice. We went to the zoo. We cried a lot. We mourned. It was very good for us. We came back home, a couple of days went by and I still had not, and again, I'm jumping around in time, like it's the Book of Boba Fett, which is to say in a confusing and unsuccessful manner that does not move the narrative forward. So, again, this is first miscarriage. It's really hard for me to talk about one without talking about the other. So we eventually did decide to go with option number two, which is where they there's a certain kind of pill that is, I think, the same thing they would give you for an abortion. And she put four pills, I think, inside my vaginal canal. And she said, you know, some people will not feel anything from this. And then she made a joke. She's like, some people say it's the worst pain they've had in their life, but they've never had a hip replacement or something like that. And it was the worst pain I've been in my life.
Oh,
it was
God.
Awful because it was, the thing is it makes you, cramp so that it expels the, as we say, the products of conception. And, it was awful. I was like laying on the floor on a yoga mat and Dr. Ian Malcolm was trying to distract me by asking me Harry Potter trivia questions. That was very effective and it was hard. And going through that, I knew that I did not want to do that again because I was in pain days later. Cause I mean,
was it worse than labor?
Well, the thing is with labor, I had an epidural, you know?
All right.
I could maybe take some really weak Tylenol, but it's kind of hard to compare. But I remember later thinking about how awful it was when I was pregnant and I knew that I would, you know, probably successfully deliver. I was so terrified of labor. And part of it was I was thinking back to when my body was expelling the products of conception, how painful and awful it was. And I just assumed that it would be like that, but like times 20. But I had a fairly uneventful, normal labor and delivery. And I got the epidural as soon as I could. And, you know, there was certainly near the end, there's like a button that you can push to keep releasing meds in the epidural. And I was just like, pushing it over and over, but
the placebo button.
Yes. It won't do anything unless like 40 minutes or 45 minutes have passed. So, but it's still, I mean, it's just so different because you just have all this adrenaline and you're like, I can't wait to meet the baby. I can't wait to get it out. And so the harder you push, the closer you get. And this was just like, I didn't know it was coming for me. I thought I could go to work that day for at least a half a day. And then in the car ride on the way home, I started to have cramps and I was like, I think I'll go home for a little bit. And then it was just awful.
How long did it take? Was that whole process, the pushing?
The worst of it was maybe like 45 minutes. I think from the time I took the drugs until it was over was about 4 hours.
Oh, wow.
So it just was feeling like an increasingly horrible period or PMS. And then it just was like awful. And then there was still a lot of cramping and bleeding in the following days. We tried to go to Universal Studios. Well, we did successfully go to Universal Studios because that was like, that's always like the one of the things I do to cheer myself up is to do things I couldn't do when I was pregnant. Mm. So they had changed the Jurassic Park ride into the Jurassic World ride. And basically that just means there's like one really cool part. The rest of it is kind of the same. Of course, Dr. Ian Malcolm being Dr. Ian Malcolm, you wanted to see that and I wanted to see it too. So we went on that and that probably made things worse. And also walking around the park made it worse. So we were in the wizarding world of Harry Potter and I started to feel that I was like just bleeding a ton. And so I was like, let's just go home. And I remember, I remember sitting in the bathroom. You haven't been to either of the Harry Potter parks, right?
Yeah. Well, in Florida.
Okay. So have you been in the bathroom with Moaning Myrtle?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there and I'm like thinking, I should not have come here. I have had a miscarriage. I am bleeding more than this pad will take. I have one more pad. I need to get the fuck out of here. And in the background, there's you know, and all these kids are running around and like, so anyway, I fucking hate Moaning Myrtle forever now. I mean.
Oh, God. I don't know if I should laugh, but that's so funny.
No, please. I'm trying to make this as entertaining as possible.
Oh, that is. That's real life, you know?
Yeah, it is. So anyway, back to the present time. I knew that I was – well, first of all, it's funny because sometimes the doctor seems like she's this is my obstetrician now, the one that delivered F. Murray Abraham and the one that's sitting with me as I'm processing this news. There's been a couple times where she's felt like she needs to talk me into something. It makes me feel like she's had other conversations with other women where it was hard. And this was – she was trying to talk me into doing the DNC. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, absolutely.
You were already there.
I was like, there's a thing where you can just put me under anesthesia and then I wake up and it's done. I'm all about that. And it is – but the thing is, because this – because it had progressed a little further – than the last time, actually almost twice as long. Like the first one, I think they said the fetus stopped growing around 6 weeks. And this one, they said it was about 11 weeks. Wow. I have this app, the What to Expect When You're Expecting app. And it tells you like a funny thing every week. Like this week, the baby is as big as blah, blah, blah. And going back to the Jurassic World motif, the last time that it had given me a thing, it was as big as the amber from John Hammond's Cane, you know,
where it was like I think a hacky you had texted sack. Me to that.
Yeah, I think so. Because I was like, you know, life finds a way, you know.
Right.
And it was funny because we'd made a lot of Jurassic Park jokes with F. Murray Abraham because he was like bred in a lab, you know, like a little baby velociraptor. And then this other pregnancy was like, you know, the velociraptors had escaped into the park and spontaneously gotten pregnant
and changed their sex.
Yeah, exactly. I don't remember where I was at. So we decided to do the surgery because of COVID. He couldn't come with me. But that made childcare easy. I had to go in the next day and get a COVID test. And then the lady was like, are you sick? Are you, you know, you have some symptoms? Are you have like a cold or something? And I was like, no, I've just been crying a lot because I just had a miscarriage and I found out yesterday. And she was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And it's funny because like, the first time this happened, I kind of made it a point to tell almost everyone that I came across what had happened because I was so adamant about talking about it openly. And I still feel very strongly about that. Because people just don't. And when I started to talk about it, all of these, all the people I talked to were women. I usually say people who can get pregnant, but I, even though trans men can get pregnant, I don't personally know a trans man who's been pregnant or given birth. Okay. That's not true. I know one, but it was before he had transitioned, but, in this case, it's women that are telling me about this. And so many people had stories, and some of them had had multiple miscarriages, and I just had no idea. I knew that it happened a lot, but no one talks about it. So, that was probably one of the things that was the most soothing and helpful is, people reaching out to me who had gone through it before. And there was a couple of friends that said, people are going to say stupid shit to you, just so you know, because they don't know. We don't talk about this. Nobody talks about how to talk to a grieving parent after a miscarriage or a stillbirth. And people are very uncomfortable with it. People were uncomfortable with us doing IVF because it's sad. You don't know how it's going to turn out. And they want to make themselves feel better. So we got a whole bunch of people asking if we had considered adoption.
Oh, my Lord.
I don't know if I've told you this before, but as you know, I am adopted. So I may have heard a thing or two about it. But and it's funny, when we made a big announcement on Facebook the first time that this happened, and I specifically asked, I said, please do not ask us if we are considering adoption because we're not, you know, thinking of next moves and this and that. And there was a friend that had brought that up that was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry if I ever did that. The only reason I did it is because, you know, my friends, they adopted and they had so much success with it. And I really wanted to be like, dude, you are making my miscarriage about you. Okay. Yeah. So STFU, but you know, there's always going to be that person. So it's funny because when jumping back in time to last Thursday when I first got the news, the nurse that was my buddy that had had miscarriages, for some reason she was not available, and there was another nurse that needed to take my blood because they needed to look at my enzyme or electrolytes or something, some levels in my blood before I did the surgery. And so I'm sitting down with this lady and we're, you know, making playful banter. And then she sort of gets quiet. She's like, I heard what happened. And then I got a little sniffly. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. And she's like, you're a strong mama. You'll be okay. You'll be okay. So that's number one. Number one thing, do not say to someone, do not try to. And I know that she was trying to help. But it's very clear to me that she has not had a miscarriage, or maybe she did, and that's what helped her, is someone being like, you'll be fine, you know? And I don't like it when people are like, you're strong, you're going to make it through this, you know? Because what I really want is for someone to say, this is incredibly sad. And I want someone to sit there through the pain. And I mean, it's not to say like, I want to make other people feel sad too, but people are like, what can I do? And it's just like, be there, check in, ask how I'm doing. Don't try to gloss over it. Don't try to be like, well, at least you have another baby, or at least you have another shot. So, okay. That was one out of three insensitive things she said.
Okay.
The next thing she said, the first child that we had was through IVF. And so we didn't think that we could get pregnant. And so this was just sort of a spontaneous thing. And she goes, oh, no wonder.
What does that even mean?
Like, of course you had a miscarriage because you got pregnant, you know, if you're doing IVF, clearly there's something wrong with your business, so you shouldn't have tried to do this on your own or something.
This is the same person in the same
this
conversation?
This is the same person. This is the same person. Yeah.
Wow.
So then again, I try to change the conversation. And I'm just thinking, I'm not really pissed off. I'm just like making mental notes about how horribly insensitive she's being while trying to make me feel better. So then the last thing she said was, so I was like, well, you know, when we did IVF, we had one more embryo. So actually, you know, we have a kid out in a freezer in Encino right now. And she says, oh, so you have one hope left.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? Yeah. And I was like, you work in an obstetrician's office. This has to happen all the time.
No.
Like, was she new? Was she...
Now I am in shock. That is shocking.
Yep. I kind of wanted to talk to the office manager or my doctor about it, because I want them to make sure their staff is like properly trained in sensitivity. Only because like if it had been my first miscarriage and I was losing my goddamn shit, I would have been very upset with all of those things. You know, I've gone through it before. I know, you know, I had lots of emotional distance. I was very upset at the time, but I mostly was just like, holy shit, this lady is a joke. This is ridiculous.
And remind me, why were you interacting with her specifically?
She was taking blood samples. I had to give blood.
Oh, that's it. She was just taking blood.
In preparation. Yeah. So she was the blood taker person. But she must interact with pregnant women all the time. Like, I was just floored.
How old was this person, would you say?
Probably 40s. She had a little badge on her clippy thing, that had a picture of her son who looked like he was like 7 or 8. So 30s, 40s.
I'm only asking. Sure. So it wasn't someone who was like just out of high school or something.
No, it was somebody that should have known better. Maybe they worked for a urologist previously. I don't know. And the thing is, it seemed like she seemed like she really thought she was helping me. So I kind of felt like it was almost like her grab bag of make you feel better things to say. And I don't know, like, people are weird. People are different.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think one of the hardest things about this miscarriage is that it was very triggering and reminded us of the first one. I actually am doing pretty well. My hormones are kind of hormone soup right now. So I cry several times a day, but I'm not in like a depression. I don't feel like I'm never going to be able to face the world again. The first time I went through this, I was just absolutely destroyed. But I also feel guilt because we were really, really stressed out about the timing of this baby. Like, I was really stressed about having two kids in diapers and two kids on formula or, you know, what maybe by that time F. Murray Abraham wouldn't be, but he still would be just shy of 2 years old. By the time he had a little brother or sister, and several people had said like, oh, it's good to just get the hard part out of the way with both kids at once. But I was really stressed about it.
So the guilt is for feeling that the baby would have been an inconvenience in any way.
There is a sense of relief, and I feel guilty about the sense of relief, but I also know that
for the sense of relief. I can totally understand why you would feel guilty for that, but yeah, you totally shouldn't, because that's actually true. Like, those are stresses that you won't have now, that it's just part of the, and it doesn't negate everything else. It doesn't negate the pain you feel and the sorrow, because you would have had good experiences. You know, there would have been much wonderful about the other baby as well. But as you know from the last year, I hope there would have been a lot of shit too that you don't have to deal with now. And that's okay to feel that too. It's totally fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those things where, like, if I had a friend, that's what I would tell them. And I'm aware intellectually that I shouldn't feel bad about that, but I still sort of do. But I also feel bad that I'm not like as sad as before. It's like I feel like not honoring the baby, but it's hard because we were so emotionally invested in the first one, and it also was before we knew if we could have a baby. You know, I was like, is this ever going to work? And
right. Yeah. I remember.
I don't mean to make light of secondary infertility, because that is a thing that people, there's a lot of times people have their first kid just fine, and then they have trouble having a second kid. And people don't understand that, because they're like, well, you already have a kid, just, you know, and you already have a biological kid, just adopt one, you know, or like just enjoy the child you have, or whatever. But it's stressful then too. And everybody's circumstances are different. So, you know, there could be someone that got pregnant with their second or third pregnancy, and it could be more devastating than an earlier miscarriage. But then there's also it is sadder in a way, because we know our son and we love him so much, and it's hard to not imagine, you know, what that life would have been like. And even the pregnancy I was looking forward to, I was just almost out of the first trimester, which is horrible. And looking forward to the part where I would have a baby bump and I'd start to feel the baby kicking, and then Dr. Ian Malcolm would be able to feel it kicking. And okay, I guess I'm sad enough. It's really hard. Is there anything I didn't cover that you wanted to ask me about? Or I kind of feel like I...
Not that I wanted to ask you about, but I also had, like, when you texted me about it, I think it was the day you had found out.
Yeah.
But you were just really drunk, I think, by that point, or like getting drunk or something. Oh. So I haven't really been able to gauge, just from texting, how you've been...
Let's see.
Experience.
I think it might have been when I got out of surgery and I was on drugs.
This was before. I think it was last week. It was either the day you found out or the next day. And I was asking you like how you're doing, and you're like, oh, I'm fine, I'm pretty drunk anyway, or something.
Oh, that's right. The Gunkles sent us alcohol. That was one thing I was gonna say.
Oh, it was the day of the Olympics. You were watching the Olympics.
Alcohol, sushi, raw cookie dough.
That'll do it.
All the things I couldn't eat before, I was like, I'm gonna indulge in all of that stuff, and that's helped a lot. I was able to take a whole week off of work, and that has been really great. That was last time I was an idiot. If you ever have a miscarriage, listeners, do not try to go back to work like 3 days later. I mean, this
or
was
the
before,
same day.
Yeah, there's two different, because the first time I went back still being, I don't know if I would say technically pregnant, but still having the fetus inside. And most people were really cool, but I didn't want to help any students. There was one guy that was a huge asshole to me. And because I told my coworkers, I was like, I'm not going to interact with students. I'm just going to get paperwork done. That's it. And then everybody was on the phone, and this guy in marketing, who I hate, I still hate him so much. And, he was like, the student needs help immediately. I was like, okay, someone else is going to take care of it. And he's like, no, you need to talk to her right now. And he's not even in my department. And I was like, I don't know if you know this, but I've been out of work because I had a miscarriage. And he's like, yeah, I know.
Oh, my Lord.
But he's a special kind of asshole. And so I was like, yeah, I was like, okay, I'll help them, and, you know, whatever. I helped them order transcript or whatever it was something quick and easy. And then my friends were like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was on the phone with a student. I don't know why, you know, why he wouldn't just, you know, leave you alone. But, also I was the interim registrar at the time.
My
friend. So I was both associate registrar and registrar. It was like the most horrible timing ever. So I was trying to be brave and a good employee. But if there's one thing I learned from all of that, it is that work is not important at all. I mean, there's no reason to ever put work before your family life or your own mental health or anything. I mean, like, I'm sure it would be a different if I had my dream job and they were like, if you take off work, you're going to lose this job. I don't know. Like, I might've been in a different position, but, I have a really cool boss right now. And so there was no, and my boss's boss also, both of them are super cool. So there was, and they both knew I was pregnant. So I just told them, you know, I lost the baby. This is the day of the surgery. I'm going to need this many days to recuperate. And then I'm just going to take the rest of the week just to have it. And they were both like, of course. And I know, like, the old me probably would have felt guilty about taking so much time off. But having been through what I went through before, I know that it would have been stupid to try to work. People have such, in customer service, which I'm sure Dingle Mary will find out very quickly, people think their issue is so important. And it's usually not as important as they think it is. And so I'm sure I just would have gotten mad at so many people that would be like, why is my transcript late? And I would be like, hey, my baby died, you know, but I wouldn't be able to actually say that.
How are you feeling physically? Like, does the DNC have any, or just anything? Are you tired? Are you sore?
Yeah, I felt really good. Like 2 days after, like the 2 days following, I just felt like I mean, not that I could run a marathon because I wouldn't have been able to do that in the first place. But a couple days after that, I started to have some cramping. Yeah, I'm pretty fine. Like, I've had a couple dizzy spells and things, but I think I'm okay. It's a pretty routine procedure and a lot lower risk than if I had tried to just let it happen the old fashioned way, I guess.
And is F. Murray, is he weirded out by all your crying, or is he just used to it by this point?
No, he still thinks it's laughing. He still laughs at us when we cry.
That's good.
It happened on the phone with my nephew. You know, my sister has a 1-year-old. Have we talked about this? She adopted when she was like 48.
You and I have talked about it. I don't think we've talked about it.
Okay. Yeah. We haven't talked about it on the pod. So her son is 3 months younger than F. Murray Abraham, and they love to FaceTime, although they both are at a point where they just grab the phone. And so if you look at either phone, it will make you nauseous because they're just running around with the phone.
Right. Yeah.
And the whole phone call is just us trying to get them to not accidentally hang up. Yeah. And it will inevitably end with one of them hanging up. But anyway, his little cousin started to cry because he's a baby. And then so F. Murray Abraham started to laugh. He thought they were like laughing together. But
maybe he's a sociopath.
Yeah, yeah, I'm probably. He's such a cute one now. I cried so hard in the doctor's office. And then again, when I got in the car, that people around me probably would be scared. But since I've been home, it ventures into ugly cry territory, but it's not like screaming and wailing like a hired mourner or something. But I did go through all the cycles a lot quicker. Like, I was in shock a lot more the last time. And it's funny because I remember thinking like, oh, this is going to be a weird week. Like, thinking like after the week was over, I would just be fine and like not care about it anymore. Like, I'm going to be sad all week, you know? And obviously I was in denial because I'm still sad. I mean, I've been thinking so much about the last pregnancy that we lost because of this whole experience. But I do feel like I sort of went through the stages of grieving more quickly. But that's the thing about grief, is it'll sneak back up on you. You know, when we lost the first baby, we had like a little ceremony with a couple of friends, and my minister from my Unitarian church like did a little thing, and we like wrote little wishes to the baby on like this rice paper that dissolves in water, and then we like watered a plant with the water, and then the plant died immediately. Which was really sad and disturbing for us.
Yeah.
But you know, it's probably because of the rice paper, but anyway, it was nice to mark it in some way. And so we are thinking about how to maybe do that at We don't know what the sex of the baby was. We were like just about to find out. So we are talking about maybe giving the baby a name that would be, unisex or something. Although to be honest, I've been thinking of the baby as a her, which is weird because I was thinking of the baby as a he until that time, because we don't really have another shot at a girl unless we get spontaneously pregnant again. Because our two embryos, the good one and the weird one, don't tell the weird one I called him that, are both male. So, and it was really very unlikely that we got pregnant. And I really don't think that we're going to do IVF again unless neither of those embryos work out. But it would be pretty late in my reproductive life to do so. So anyway, I'm sorry. I go on. This, you know what? This is really helping me a lot. This is more than I've talked about it with anybody except for Dr. Ian Malcolm. So thank you. Thank you for doing this.
All I have to say really is you're strong. You'll be fine. You have one more hope. And shoot, there was one more. I can't remember. There was another one that I thought would be nice for you to hear.
Well, of course this happened because...
Oh, right, right. Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully that helps, you know. It's I don't have a lot of experience, but all right. Well, thank you for that, and we will see you all next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
This has been another House of Barbarism podcast, written, recorded, edited, and produced by Document of Barbarism, your friendly neighborhood mountain man fairy princess. Remember, there is no document of civilization which is not, at the same time, a documenta barbarism. Mwah.